Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UA Little Rock Public Radio. I'm Daniel Breen, sitting in for Ann Nicholson. The Arkansas Rep's latest show of their current season pays tribute to four titans of rock and roll. Million Dollar Quartet looks back at one fateful day in 1956 when Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Elvis Presley gathered at Memphis's Sun Studios for a once-in-a-lifetime recording session. Sky Scott, who plays the rockabilly icon Carl Perkins in Rep's staging of Million Dollar Quartet, and the Rep's marketing director Karen Rudolph sat down with the Art Scene to talk about the show, as well as the challenges of bringing a live rock concert to the stage. The show runs from September the 4th to October 6th.
So I grew up in a small town in Indiana, and I've been living in New York City the last 10 years now. A long time, wow. And I've kind of been doing this show off and on for the last 5 or 6 years. So I got a call to come play Carl Perkins here, and here we are.
So would you say your background is more in acting or singing, dancing, all
you know,
of the above?
It's more in acting. I studied acting and musical theater at college, but primarily acting, and I'd always played instruments as a hobby and didn't realize until I moved to the city and all of these shows were involving actors playing instruments live on stage. And I kind of lucked out because I play several things, and it's led to this odd life doing a bunch of shows pretending, getting to be rock stars, which is very cool because my hobby kind of became my profession and I melded the two worlds together, and it's been a really fun journey to do that.
What other famous rock stars have you portrayed
so
in the past?
So I did the show Jersey Boys for a really long time, played the famous record producer Bob Crew, covered the role of Bob Gaudio, the piano player who wrote like Short Shorts. I recently did a show about the other recording studio in Memphis, Tennessee, Stax Records, where I played Steve Cropper, the Blues Brothers guitar player, and then obviously Carl Perkins in Million Dollar Quartet. So it's been quite a weird, fun journey.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had to change your approach for playing Carl Perkins, but it seems like you've been sort of firmly engaged in this 1950s rock and roll.
You do have to change your approach musically. Carl was, he was the father of rockabilly guitar. Paul McCartney famously said, if there were no Carl Perkins, there would be no Beatles. People all over the world worshipped this man. He created this style of playing the guitar. So he was so poor growing up. His family put all of their funds together to buy his first guitar. They couldn't even afford guitar strings. So when the strings would break, he'd have to tie the steel together. So it forced him to bend the notes on the fretboard. I know it's hard to understand unless you play guitar, but it created a very specific tone. So he has he has guitar licks that are super recognizable, much like any guitarist that we know today, like John Mayer, or Clapton, or Hendrix. So I have to meld my musical style with what Perkins was playing on those original records, and that's quite a fun challenge for me.
Gospel, country, and rock. I'm just wondering sort of what sort of a melding does Carl Perkins fit into that? You mentioned rockabilly, and
so,
also, what is your style?
My personal style?
Sure, yeah.
I grew up listening to Dave Matthews Band, so it's about as far away from Carl as you can get. But Carl's influences were rock. So all of these guys in this show worship Chuck Berry. He was doing things with the guitar and creating a sound that nobody had ever heard before. But Carl was taught guitar by this man, John Waters, who they were sharecroppers together when Carl was a little kid. And he was sitting on the back porch in Tennessee, and he was teaching him more of a gospel-influenced guitar style and blues. That 1-4-5 hot licks, Carl used to call them. But he and his brothers were kind of a family band, and they were just discovering a sound together as they would play live gigs and moving from playing acoustic guitars to electric guitars. As we fondly like to refer to it in the show as the band, we like to call it we're a rock band with lines. It is a musical, but we play everything live, and the songs are obviously taken from the catalog of music of Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins. And we play like a Chuck Berry tune and some old gospel songs. So you know, you get a bit of a story, but it's a rock and roll concert, more so than a musical, for sure. It's very different than any standard musical I've ever been in. It's a lot more fun. There's a lot more room to play within the world than, I don't know, like Sound of Music or whatever. You know, like we're up there and we're creating everything live after the stage manager says, go. So there's a lot of freedom in that. And it's a really fun thing to watch.
So that must be just sort of a totally different way of rehearsing and preparing for the show. You must have to learn these songs in advance. And then...
Absolutely. My first day ever with the show. So I flew to, there was a company in Las Vegas. And when I learned the show, I learned it there. And normally in a musical, you would meet on the first day and everybody introduces themselves. And then you sit down with the script and the score and you learn music for a couple days and you're sitting there and you have it in front of you. With this show, the original music director was like a famous Nashville musician. He's not from the musical world at all. Everybody knows the songs already. And so you show up and day one, it's like, all right, get up there and go. And you got a full sound system and the mics and everything. And it's terrifying. You just jump right off the cliff and go for it. So it's a very different experience, but that's the only way to really become a band together with each new set of guys that are doing the show. And that's what we've been working on our rehearsal process here, is just trying to become the band and find that sound.
Being terrified, like you said, do you sort of channel that as excitement or maybe, you know, how these people felt sort of early on in their career?
It is exciting. When I first started doing the show, it was nerves for sure, because you're kind of, especially as Carl, he's the band leader. He's playing the lead electric guitar. The other guys play acoustic guitar. You're kind of, that sound is out in front. It's very bright. So it's scary to have to, and it seems like every song you've got a guitar solo. And that was scary. Now I've learned a lot more and I've gotten better at playing Carl. And it's really fun and exciting to kind of fine tune the sound with each person and discover what each one of those four guys brings into the room. And it's a really neat experience to do that.
You mentioned Carl Perkins is sort of the band leader in this quartet. I'm just wondering how their styles differentiated, both the actual musicians and sort of how they're represented in this show.
A lot of these guys, so Jerry Lee Lewis is on his own island. He was, I don't really know what his influence is. Obviously, if you listen to him, you can hear, gosh, Little Richard and James Brown, like these crazy artists that would attack their music. The other three guys, Carl, Elvis, and Johnny Cash, worshipped gospel music. That's all they wanted to sing. That's all Johnny Cash wanted to do initially, was sing gospel songs. And Elvis was highly influenced watching people on Beale Street and trying to emulate those black artists of the time. Those three used to tour together, and they would sit in the car and share stories about which songs that they liked. So as you'll hear, the original recording of Million Dollar Quartet, which is available on Spotify, they were singing through a bunch of gospel tunes. We do a couple of them in the show. We've obviously added all the hits to the show because that's what you come to hear. But you definitely can hear that influence in a lot of their music. Johnny Cash in his lyrics, I think Elvis in his vocals, and Carl in his approach to the instrument. So I think that's where each of those three bring that. And then Jerry Lee, it just goes crazy on the keys. I don't really know what that comes from, but... I think he was really nervous, and I think that's why Jerry Lee would shake his leg all the time. And he was emulating a guitar with the chords on the top of the piano, which you'll hear. He's like just banging the chords out, so it almost sounds like he's playing a guitar solo.
So that's good. You'll have the most nervous person play Jerry Lee Lewis, and he can just
go
crazy. Get his
there you go. No, Brandon's amazing. Please come see him in the show. It's so great.
Definitely, of course. I'm glad you mentioned sort of the gospel influence and Beale Street, things like that. I'm just wondering how the show sort of treats that. You know, that's sort of been a big discussion, how rock music was essentially created by black people and then played by white people, things like that.
You know, the show doesn't go into that too much. We're more focused. So the story of the show, Sam Phillips was the owner, and I don't know what you would call him. He was everything. He was the engineer. He was the producer of Sun Records, and it's his story essentially. So the show it was a real thing. It takes place on December 4th, 1956. It was a Carl Perkins recording session that Sam had brought Jerry Lee in to play piano for on Carl's records. He hadn't had a hit since Blue Suede Shoes. And Sam was trying to develop a new sound for Carl to get him back out there. Elvis was driving from LA to come to Memphis, and Sam saw an opportunity, and he called Johnny Cash and said, you need to come by the studio. And he also called the press and didn't tell the guys. So the show is an amalgamation of that night and what happened, and you get a little bit of the backstory, and you start to find out about all of these guys' journey with and without Sun. And it's told from the perspective of Sam, so it's his story. So they focus on that, and the songs are more, they're not like storytelling devices. It's more of like these, you get to see these guys recording and having fun and just taking their music into this studio and space. So we don't really touch on that, but we do sing a couple of the tunes. Like Elvis reflects using a couple of the gospel tunes in the show.
As you mentioned, it's a rock show with lions. How do you sort of balance the musical numbers, since they aren't furthering the plot along? How do you balance that with the actual plot?
You know, that is so tough to do. And these jukebox shows really struggle with that always. This show, it seems so organic because of the fact that we're recording. So Sam is trying to get a specific tone out of Carl at the top of the show, and we're working on the song over and over, and he's like, try this, try that, and you're watching that happen. So it doesn't feel completely out of the blue when, you know, somebody starts singing a song. Like Johnny Cash comes in, and he's like, oh, please play us Walk the Line. You know, we haven't heard that in years, John. Let's, you know, it's a really neat thing. And I think that balance is found very well in this show. We like to say we don't know why it works or how it works, but it does. So, yeah, although they're not furthering the plot, each of these songs kind of have their own story to them. And I think it, for some reason, it just works within the context of the play.
And it takes place just within one day?
Just one night. Yeah, there's a famous photo from the night that we do see in the show. But it starts sometime mid-afternoon, and we go until later that night, and it's just the one night. And then we play, we do like an encore at the end of the show, which is like each guy's like really famous song. But the first 90 minutes is just the story.
And then what happened to their careers after that? Did they all take off essentially?
Well, yeah. So that's a fun thing. This is kind of before, it's after Elvis filmed his first movie. Carl had Blue Suede Shoes, and Johnny had Folsom Prison, and Jerry Lee, it was before all of his stardom. So we're seeing all of these guys before the big boom. We obviously know what happened to Elvis and Johnny Cash. Carl then was pretty successful as well. He's the least known, I think, of everybody. He wrote a bunch of songs, too. He wrote, like, Daddy Sang Bass for Johnny Cash. And Jerry Lee, obviously, took off, and he was still touring until, like, last year. So it's neat. It's right before all of their big booms. People always think that we're not really playing, but everything you see on that stage is being created in that moment. It would be harder to track the show and play to tracks, I think, because it's so organic. And we do it, so it's all live, and it's really fun.
Yeah, that sounds really hard. Like, how would you even mimic the guitar?
You know, it's neat because we are allowed to mess up and make mistakes. And yeah, it would be very difficult to track the show. It always surprises me when people are like, you weren't really playing. We're like, how can you think that after watching this show? It's always surprising. But it's neat because when you do mess up, or if I play a bad note, or you watch somebody break a string on stage and we're changing the string right there. It's all, you're like a fly on the wall of Sun Records for one night as an audience member for this.
So I guess that would necessitate, you know, all of the cast members needing a musical background just in case.
Yes.
Something like that happened, right?
Yeah. Everybody, it has got to be a very difficult show to cast, because you have to find not only guys that look like these guys and sound like the guys, but then can all play, because we all play. And it's not easy material either. It's a very difficult thing to find, like, a Jerry Lee that can act like Jerry Lee but also play all the crazy piano stuff. And not just the songs, we underscore the whole show as well. So you may not realize it as you're watching the show, but there's always the music in the background, and it's us still back there doing everything. It's quite demanding.
What is your musical background? I think we talked about your musical theater background. How did you, what instruments did you learn, and how?
My musical background was, like most people, I picked up a guitar in middle school, maybe I was like 12 years old, and I started playing guitar. At the time, I was playing percussion in band in school, and I continued to play percussion. So I focused on drums and guitar my whole life. I play a little bit of piano. So I've been playing for many, many years. And then what's neat about each of the shows I've been able to do is it forces me to learn a new genre of music get better and just continue to improve at the instrument. And this show, since there's no safety net of any kind musically, it's forced me to really improve a lot. And it's been a neat thing to get better at this style, but also at the instrument as a whole. But I drummed in Jersey Boys too, so that was a different challenge altogether. But those are my main instruments. I think most of the guys play multiple instruments in the show.
And you have to sing, of course, as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have the most freedom. I feel like people don't know Carl's vocals as much, but obviously Elvis and Johnny Cash, those guys have to sound like those guys. And that is strenuous vocally to do, to try to sing like not yourself. But they're great in the show.
When you're an Elvis or a Johnny Cash, you sort of have to, is it an impersonation? I guess I'm asking, like, what is the difference between an impersonation or an homage or something like that?
So I think with the show, impersonating is tough because you're never, especially with Elvis, you're never going to be exactly what anybody thinks of that individual. For somebody that's had such a large career with so many different sides to that career and sounds and looks. And since this is so early on, I think it is a nice blend of trying to find that sound of the person as best as the artist can and mixing themselves into that so that after a couple minutes of watching it, the audience kind of lets go of that thought of what they thought Elvis or Johnny Cash looked like or sounded like, and it's kind of just accepting, like, this person's version of that guy. The sound, though, helps immensely, and the guys in this show sound amazing. The Johnny Cash's voice, that's something you're just born with. That bass, the Elvis stuff, you know, everybody has their Elvis impression in the world, so it's like fine-tuning that musically, but it's tough. It is difficult to sing and try to affect a tone and still be able to sing. So all of that, the Elvis stuff is so difficult to sing. It's so rangy and high. And then when you're trying to add that affectation and the growl that he would sing song, he would do 20 takes in the studio so that he would trash his voice so it sounded so good, you know, but we have to do it 8 times a week. So it's a tough thing to do and bring to the stage. It feels odd having to do a rock show like twice in one day. For us, it's a very hard thing to do.
And it's also sort of like a very specific window in these people's careers, I guess. Does that affect how you approach that at all? You know,
Oh, absolutely. They were all so young at this time, especially with the Elvis, I think. He changed so much over the course of his career that I would assume the approach is very different for Elvis at 21 than it was Elvis at, you know, the Eagle suit Elvis that we know.
It was like before they got cocky, essentially.
Yeah. And you see that in the show. Sam really kind of created these guys. He was a genius producer. And he took their tics. Like, Elvis was a really nervous young guy. And the leg stuff, that all stemmed from nerves. And Sam saw that and saw the effect that that had and pushed that further and further and further and kind of created this, the individual we know from later on in his massively successful career. Same with Johnny Cash. He took the gospel influence that Johnny liked and had him writing using the feelings that he had that those songs would give him and turning it into something that a country audience could latch onto lyrically. And with Carl, I guess it was more about the licks and the guitar, but you get to watch that in the show a little bit, and it's a neat thing.
It's sort of like the evolution. You're watching it, you know, within this one day, the evolution of
each of these characters we meet at that young age, and then we get to see like a flashback sequence of how they were made to where they are at that moment in time in 1956. So you get to see that. And then you get to see this person, Sam Phillips, who basically created rock and roll in some capacities, or at least the way to present them via icons and present that music. So you get to see that in the show.
How does the show treat the people who aren't the main four, essentially? Are they involved in any musical numbers?
Fluke and brother Jay Perkins, who was Carl's brother, plays bass, and Fluke Holland, who actually played drums. So it was Carl's band. So those guys are on stage the entire time. So we see them. They do have lines. They interact. They're in the band. Elvis showed up with a girl that night. Her real name was Marilyn Evans. When they were writing the show, they didn't know who she really was at the time. So it was kind of, they knew there's this, you know, the famous photo that you see, she was actually cropped out of the photo. So if you look it up on Google, you find the real photo. So they kind of wrote a character named Diane, who's an amalgamation of all the women from Elvis's life at that time. And she plays shakers and tambourine and sings. She was a singer. And Sam has a fun little musical moment that I won't give away on the air because we worked it in with this guy who's a great musician as well. So you really see the whole studio kind of comes to life in this. To go back to the question about musicals versus this show, the staging is a little more free, which is really neat for us because we're playing solos and we're kind of just jamming and creating these songs together every night. We have more freedom than I've ever had in blocking or staging for a show. So we get to kind of move within the light, as long as we're in the light, obviously. But it's a little more open, which allows the actors to feel a little more free to really invest in these people, as opposed to feeling like, oh, you have to be here at this moment and that, you know. The costumes, though, will take everybody back. And obviously, it takes place in December, so there's a little Christmassy theme in the studio, and it's neat. The set is really, it's really cool. It doesn't necessarily, we're trying to create the potential memory of what Sun Studios was. If you went to Sun Studios, it is just white panel in a square box. It is about as boring as you could imagine. So obviously, the set designer took free reign to create something fun to look at.
And then is that encouraged, the freeness that you mentioned is sort of
Not at all.
Going all around?
That I get that question a lot, like, are you purposely making those faces while you're playing the guitar? And I'm like, I'm just playing the guitar. I'm just going nuts. We're all just going nuts, you know, and trying to create something every night. And so the director encourages that. Whatever people are bringing into the room. If the Jerry Lee can sit on top of the piano and play behind his back, great. If he wants to play blindfolded, great. If I play behind my head, awesome. You know, all that stuff is highly encouraged and fun.
Can the Jerry Lee do that?
Yes. I don't want to give anything
away.
There's been a lot of different versions of the show where we just get, during the concert, we get to just kind of show off a little bit. Because the rest of the show, the songs kind of take place in context. We want them to sound as close to the records as we can while keeping it available as an audience for a musical. But the encore of the show, we get to just kind of, Elvis gets to throw out all the moves that he's got, and Jerry Lee can go crazy on the piano, and I play some fun guitar solos, and Sam has his neat little musical harmonica moment. So that's where we bring all that stuff out, is at the end.
Before we started recording, we talked a little bit about nostalgia. What are your thoughts on this show's relationship to nostalgia, and also what its appeal would be to maybe a Generation Z person who had never heard of these four people? I mean, have heard of them, but not heard their music, perhaps, don't know the story.
You know, it's odd. When I started doing the show, you think, like, oh, man, I don't know any of these tunes, right? You look at the list of songs, and you're like, nah, I don't know. I know like Hound Dog and Walk the Line, or, you know, the famous things. I didn't know who Carl Perkins was before doing the show. But you've heard all of these songs. And so for the older audience, it's taking them back to their childhood and listening to the radio or going to a dance and hearing this music. But for a new generation, it is so neat to watch somebody you know, it's like how I started playing guitar. I saw Dave Matthews or John Mayer playing the guitar. So for somebody to come and maybe get dragged to the show and be like, I don't want to go to this thing. And then we come out of the gates and everybody's playing everything live and it's loud and in your face and you're watching people create this music that is completely timeless. Like, there's a reason these songs are still played on the radio, because they have something special. And it's rock and roll. I there's no other way to describe it. But doing like student matinees and seeing these little kids just like eyes widened at playing guitar solos and discovering that is really neat. And then hearing a cool story that you may not have known, or at like, man, watching, you know, like a group of young girls discover who Elvis Presley was for the first time, you know, that can connect those generations in a capacity. It's really neat. Johnny Cash is timeless. I mean, all his tunes are so just, I don't know, like dark in a really great way. And people have always connected to his lyrics, and you don't hear a bass on the radio today. So it's neat to just go see something that you wouldn't see every day. But yeah, for kids, I think music is such a way of life. Otherwise, it would have just faded out like any other fad. And it's neat to see songs that were the soundtrack to people's lives and hopefully can become nostalgia for those young kids that see the show maybe, and then years from now, like, oh man, I heard that tune before. I don't know where they heard it or why they heard it, because I feel like that was me with this show. I definitely remember being at the grocery store as a little kid hearing like Great Balls of Fire for the first time and having no idea who or what or why. But then years later coming to the show, like, oh my gosh, it's that guy who lit pianos on fire and was a crazy person.
How are ticket sales going?
We are doing pretty well so far. I would encourage people to get tickets early, because we anticipate a sellout for this show. Wherever it's held around the country, tickets go fast. So grab your tickets early. And like we were saying earlier, I just keep hearing people say they come to see the show and then they immediately are leaving the show ready to go straight to the box office and get more tickets. It's a show that you can see multiple times and bring back friends. Runs through October 6th. Tickets start at just $20, and you can get them at therep.org or by calling the box office. And that number is 501-378-0405.
The new season, how's that go?
Yeah, we just announced we're going to have a spring 2020 season, and that's going to get us through the summer of 2020. Then we'll start back on a school year calendar of shows. But for spring 2020, we announced three new shows that we're having. The first one is Anne, which is based on Anne Richards, the former governor of Texas. And then our second one is going to be The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is based on a very popular book. So a lot of people will be excited about that one. And then in July, we'll have Bye Bye Birdie, which Will Trice, our new executive artistic director, I've heard him say that's just the funnest of musicals. And so a great way to in the summer.
Very cool.
Come see some live rock and roll. For real, it's a great time. You won't regret it.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, man.
That was Karen Rudolph, Arkansas Rep Marketing Director, and Sky Scott, who plays Carl Perkins in the Rep's production of Million Dollar Quartet. The show runs from September 4th to October 6th at the Rep's downtown Little Rock Theater.
And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.